Hi, this is Newt. Due to the virus, I'm recording from home, so you may notice a difference in audio quality. On this episode of Newt's World, this is part two of my effort to look at why the epicenter of the coronavirus outbreak in the United States is in New York and is particularly concentrated in the New York City region. As of June 3rd, New York State has 377,881 confirmed cases and 29,847 deaths. And most of those cases are in New York City, with 209,195 confirmed cases and 21,132 deaths. Why is New York the epicenter of the virus? Did the lack of leadership from New York State Governor Andrew Cuomo and New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio contribute to increasing the virus spread? I'm pleased to welcome my guest, Tammy Bruce, radio talk show host, New York Times best-selling author, Fox News political contributor, and columnist at Newsmax.com and The Guardian newspaper. She is the host of Get Tammy Bruce on Fox Nation. I was about to go on Fox and Friends the other morning, and the person ahead of me was Tammy Bruce. She was so on target about what's gone wrong in New York, I just thought I had to have her come on and share with you her own thoughts. To me, what's happened in New York is astonishingly bad. I just want to start, Tammy, and let you sort of talk about your own thoughts about what's been happening.
Well, Mr. Speaker, thank you for asking me to join you. I really appreciate it. I moved to New York City from Los Angeles in the fall of 2014. So for me, as a native Los Angelina, it was very different. I adapted to the city, and it's a great city. I've traveled a lot. New York is obviously a unique place, and it took probably about a year to adapt to the energy and to the nature of the city, but I did. And there is something about it. It's like riding a dragon, and you've got to hang on. But it is a remarkable experience. It is also the first time I've experienced where there really is a political attitude, which, of course, does not embrace people like me, ironically, right? It's a city of so many people and a city of immigrants and a city of action in life. For me, it remains fascinating to operate in. A real closed-mindedness, if you will, a refusal to think beyond what is known. Groupthink is quite active, as can happen when you associate only with like-minded people. And I think part of that is the reason why we have a kind of a political class here that is willing to do whatever it wants to do. I think the criminal history here in the city, the nature of its development, does not help. And so as an experience in life with a city that is so great and in some ways mythological, but in other ways genuinely the capital of the world, it's been heartbreaking to watch the nature of the choices that have been made here in New York. It is obviously the epicenter of the pandemic, which has to be also addressed. Why that is, the numbers of those who have died, which we believe is much higher, and how politicians have responded. And their response has been to follow the Chinese model, if you will, to clamp down. But beyond that, in the beginning, when none of us really knew anything, to continue with an attitude that is challenging our ability to take it seriously, to recognize that there is some political framework involved here, is unfortunate. It's disturbing, but it reminds us that we're going to have some kind of major investigation, some kind of look back at the nature of what happened and how and why it happened.
You know, the thing I'm struck with is that people I've been interviewing about this really see it not just as an issue of bad judgment, but as an issue of a corrupt culture in which the bad judgments were perfectly rational if what you wanted to do was take care of the corruption and the people who are corrupt. and that they ended up being more important, for example, than grandparents. In the nursing home decisions, apparently grandparents were literally being sacrificed by Governor Cuomo on behalf of the New York Hospital Association, which is his biggest donor. On the one hand, as you point out, it's an astonishingly powerful and exciting city, but it does have an underbody which surfaced during this pandemic in the form of people dying unnecessarily.
It's, again, the willingness, and groupthink can operate in a lot of ways, is the willingness to look away, the willingness to ignore what you know is occurring. It's like Ninth Avenue here in New York. There has been construction on Ninth Avenue in the same place for years, and all it does is it switches from one side of the street to the next. Everyone knows it's not going to go away. We all know we're paying for it. The cost is extraordinary. We're never quite sure what it is they're doing, but there's unions involved. We know that these are payoffs and other dynamics that are going on, and everybody just accepts it as part of the framework. Now, maybe normally the city residents wouldn't care, and they don't seem to have cared, but now it's about members of our family are being sacrificed by fiat for some reason. Normally you'd say, oh, well, accidents are made and politicians are dumb. But in the case of the nursing home, you have this astounding series of events that cannot be denied as having been deliberate to create a dynamic that would cause mass death. In any other part of life, that would be manslaughter. It would be reckless homicide. We're dealing with thousands of people. A few days ago, when Governor Cuomo of New York decided to blame Donald Trump for this situation, they disappeared Cuomo's now infamous March 25th order, forcing nursing homes to accept COVID-infected patients. It was very clear they had no choice. They had to do it, and they couldn't test. They couldn't even go out of their way to find out if someone was infected. Hospitals were not allowed to do that either. And that order has disappeared from the New York State websites. It's as though it never existed physically. Fortunately, when something hits the internet is forever. And so we have that order. But the interesting action to start covering up, and the reason that order needed to be disappeared, is because the way that it's written makes it clear that it is actually the opposite of what the federal guidance was. The federal guidance for every state when it came to nursing homes was, if you want to accept someone who either has had contact with a patient, someone who is ill or might be ill, you've got to be able to isolate them. You've got to be able to have all the ventilators. You've got to be able to handle this situation. And there is a series of rules. And if you can't, then you cannot accept that patient. And that if somebody got sick in the home and needed assistance, you would need to send them out to a hospital. You'd need to remove them from the home. There was no mandate where you had to accept someone. There were actually recommendations of not, if you couldn't handle it. Cuomo's order overcame that and said, you must accept a patient, no matter where they came from, whether they're sick or not. And it was an immediate order. They had no time to prepare. And at the same time, Mr. Speaker, he began to launch investigations into the nursing homes. And what he said to them was, if you can't accept a patient, then something must be wrong with your management and your home, and we are going to investigate you to find out what that problem is. In other words, you will lose your license if you say you are unprepared. So now you have at least 6,000. And of course, that is double the number of people who died on September 11th, just dying in the nursing homes. Some people think that that number is actually twice as high. People have not believed it, first of all. There's got to be a federal investigation. He started up some state investigation with his own health department, which of course is absurd. New York is worth saving. Those lives matter. Every life matters. And it's not just New York. It's New Jersey and a number of other states who decided that this is the best opportunity to do this.
apparently Cuomo's government decided partway in to change the rules by which you count whether or not a person has died in a nursing home. So that apparently the norm everywhere in the country is if somebody's in a nursing home, but in the last days of their life, they end up going to the hospital for a disease which they had in the nursing home, then it counts as a death involving a nursing home. Apparently, in order to minimize the horrendous number of grandparents who were dying, they literally changed the rules. So if you didn't technically die before you left the nursing home and the ambulance got you to the hospital, then you became a hospital death, not a nursing home death. That literally is almost like a totalitarian system that simply rewrites the rules to cover itself. Having made a terrible decision, Cuomo then decides to change the rules so that it won't be quite so blatantly obvious in terms of the cost of lives, how really horrendous the Cuomo decision was for senior citizens.
When you think about why would people allow this or how could this actually happen? Well, again, nursing home owners and workers, they have to speak anonymously because they're afraid of retribution. And so you have the system that whether it's the government itself, the legislature, heads of departments, no one can speak up because they're all Democrats. And Cuomo controls the government by such a heavy hand that those appointments will go away. People will be shunned. And we see the same thing in California now, which is becoming a single party state where there is no pushback from loyal opposition. Now he has turned to directly blaming the nursing homes, which is a lie. We now know with the order that they should have just moved them out of the nursing home, but it was impossible. They couldn't do it. So now they are being blamed and they didn't do it at first. Perhaps they thought they would lose their license. And now he's going to work to have them lose their license anyway. Janice Dean, who is a very popular meteorologist at Fox News, she lost both of her in-laws to this. At least one of them was in a nursing home simply to recover briefly from an operation. And both of them died from COVID. How many thousands of families now are just dealing with this? In the beginning, he tried to explain it or at least minimize this by, Mr. Speaker, noting that these people would have died anyway, that you can blame God. And these are elderly, and we can't stop everybody from getting it. I mean, imagine an order that you would make that would cause the deaths of thousands of people, and your first instinct is to not resign or apologize and beg for forgiveness. No, your first instinct is to say it would have happened anyway. These are vulnerable people. They were sick anyway. It was shocking. And that is who this man is. And it is a remarkable thing to realize. The media covers for him still. There finally are some local reporters asking questions, but the media has certainly helped facilitate a willingness to create a different narrative and to hide the facts. It's about the state deciding your grandparents are expendable. It's that simple.
Why do you think there isn't a greater sense of public outrage? When we start thinking about 12,000 or more grandparents dying, many of them unnecessarily because of bad judgment by the governor or being part of paying off the governor's political allies.
I think it's a combination of things. My first thought is being a conservative living in New York. New York is the perfect example of, as I've mentioned, groupthink. The local media in general, hammers constantly about the evil man in Washington, how everyone is under threat and at risk because of conservatives and Republicans. They're all united against everyone else who's against them. That continues to be and has always been the leftist narrative. Democrats should be outraged over what has occurred. The second answer, I think, is also the impact on the city. We've really been removed from each other. There's a level of stress and anxiety in Manhattan in particular that is hard to quantify. We, remember, are not meeting up. We are separated in our homes. Many people have chosen to not look at the news because it's too difficult. The only time you're reminded that other people are still on the island is at 7 p.m. when everybody goes to their windows to bang on the pots and to yell appreciation and thanks for the front line over in the hospital. And you can hear that throughout Manhattan. However, also, my building, it's about 60 floors high. I would say the building is about two-thirds empty. People have left the city. They've gone. So you're looking at this kind of perfect storm for the left. No one can gather. No one can demonstrate. No one can hear from someone at a restaurant or a bar that, hey, what happened to your parents? Or, yeah, you know what? My parents just died. You're not having those conversations with extended groups of people. And you're not listening to the news. And if you are listening to the news, you've been conditioned to believe Cuomo. If the media says maybe 12,000 seniors have been killed, you dismiss it as not true. And then, of course, the stress and the anxiety of the pandemic itself, I think people are choosing to not add that onto their plate. Now, the families directly affected probably feel very differently. This is within the last 8 weeks. You've got grief. You've got the inability to bury. It's chaos. And I think that as things settle down and the reality settles in, perhaps people will speak up, and some of us have got to encourage them to do so.
If all of these states that are currently opening up manage to open up with relatively modest public health impact, I'm wondering when it will seep into the blue states that all those people out there having fun, earning a living, traveling, are also Americans, and how come I'm being dominated by my government?
I think that's beginning to arise. As we've seen the success of Georgia and Florida and Tennessee, it is also pushing people like de Blasio and Cuomo to realize that the longer that they stay closed, the more untenable it is. New York City was the epicenter, so we gave them some space regarding that. But now we understand that the super majority of people who have died are from nursing homes and over the age of 80. Look, we don't know everything still about this virus and long-term impacts. However, there's a sheriff in Orange County, California. He went to the Board of Supervisors and said, look, I'm not the mask police. I'm not going to tell people what to do. He said, the people who live in this county are adults. They know what the risk is, and they can be counted on to make decisions that will protect them. And I'm not going to be the person that arrests them for not wearing a mask. We're having these new developments as though they still want to continue this framework. And it's going to be up to local law enforcement. It's going to be up to the individual community leaders and to perhaps local media at some point to say enough is enough. But we have Cuomo saying you wear a mask as a sign of respect, telling other people you don't want to be a problem for them. And then the other day he said, no, you wear a mask because it's cool now. This started, Newt, from flattening the curve so that hospitals wouldn't be overwhelmed to telling us in a framework that mirrors a religiosity about covering your body and your face, that you do it out of respect, which then creates environments in the United States where there's been one video where masked people in a supermarket chased out a woman who wasn't wearing a mask. Is this almost an attempt to divide? And I've noted when you wear a mask, it is depressing and it reminds you that something is, quote, wrong. It tells you something's wrong. When you see people wearing masks, it depresses that person who's viewing it. And I think that there is some truth to the argument that there is a political framework here, conscious and subconscious, of so wanting Donald Trump to have destroyed the country versus him elevating it as he has, that the mask becomes the last vestige of trying to maintain the feeling that the country's being destroyed and that you're not safe. And I think while there are certainly times when wearing a mask clearly could be beneficial, the fact is you can still get on an airplane, 240 people crammed in within 8 inches of each other for hours, but you can't go to a restaurant. You can't go to church, but again, you can still get on an airplane. So we're seeing the contradiction. And that's why at the end of this, we're going to need something separate from the government, like a September 11th type commission, for us to find out exactly why this happened and to the degree that it happened, and why there's an attempt to continue this kind of lockdown.
I think there's no question that a lot of these politicians got a great joy out of being petty dictators in ways that at times were pretty grotesque. Do you think it's actually going to increase the sense of anti-politician and anti-government psychology in the country as people conclude that a lot of this has been imposed on them and disrupted their lives?
We want to return to normal, but there are some aspects of what the normal was, at least here in New York City, and I know the rest of the country is not like New York City, where you don't want the old normal. You do want something better. It's going to take Americans finally taking a breath and looking out and going out. And yes, I think then there has to be a facilitation of discussions about what occurred separate from politics and who was affected, the African-American community affected disproportionately, and finding out how and why that happens. And why is it that in Democrat cities, urban areas, those who are reliant specifically on government saving us were the most impacted negatively? And those conversations, for the sake of everyone, have got to happen. It's going to take a process, but we've got to be able to do it.
I really appreciate you taking the time and laying all this out. I think you have put in context a much deeper political, cultural challenge, just the challenge of the coronavirus and the challenge of the immediate problem. This is a terrific opportunity of a conversation with you, and I'm very, very grateful.
It's just a pleasure and an honor to speak with you, sir.
Thank you to my guest, Tammy Bruce. You can read more about how New York mishandled the pandemic on our show page at newsworld.com. Newsworld is produced by Gingrich 360 and iHeartMedia. Our executive producer is Debbie Myers, and our producer is Garnsey Sloan. The artwork for the show was created by Steve Pendle. Special thanks to the team at Gingrich 360. Please email me with your questions at gingrich360.com/questions. I'll answer them in future episodes. If you've been enjoying Newt's World, I hope you'll go to Apple Podcasts and both rate us with 5 stars and give us a review so others can learn what it's all about. On the next episode of Newt's World, I'm taking a closer look at voter fraud and how it could affect the outcome of the 2020 election with my guest, Hans von Spakovsky from the Heritage Foundation. I'm Newt Gingrich. This is Newt's World.